Welcome to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reactions to pertinent current events will help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. So let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thanks for joining me live here on Real Liberty Media, or if you're listening in the podcast. Appreciate it. I appreciate the support. It's always good to see you guys in the chat room. If you want to join the conversation, come on over to Real Liberty Media, get in the chat room, say hello, and have a good time, man. Learn some stuff, like some real stuff. Hey, I do want to shout out, like, all content creators out there who are spreading the news, like the truth, questioning authority, and taking their chances, man. Some people have had really big channels on YouTube, and they are making the move over to BitChute, Rumble, other podcasting sites. Hey, Dexter's making an appearance today. I don't know if you heard him or not. He was whining a little bit. But anyway, I actually also learn a lot of stuff from other content creators, and I am just grateful that people are out there doing it. And I'm also kind of grateful that there are other avenues other than just YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. Man, those things have done more damage to, you know, our society than pretty much, well, maybe not our society, but our ability to actually get the truth. And we're producing so many uneducated people and people who have no idea what else is going on in the world today because they just believe everything that's on those social media platforms. We don't have a lot of really hard stuff to talk about today. If you didn't catch my take on the whole school shooting scenarios, all of them kind of a general response to that kind of thing happening, go over to BitChute and check out the U.S. government is complicit in these school shootings. I forget the title of it, sorry, but just go over to BitChute, look up Redneck Dentist, and it'll be one of the last couple episodes I did. You'll be able to find it pretty easily over there, but it wouldn't survive on YouTube, that's for sure. While I'm talking about YouTube, I just want to share with you guys again this one person I've been watching on YouTube. Her name is Itchy Boots, B-O-O-T-S, and just a young woman from the Netherlands who is riding around the world on a Honda 250L motorcycle. Now, let me just say her content is awesome, 20, 30 minute long, you know, just her riding around the world. I watched her whole fifth season, almost done with it. There's like, 80 episodes around South Africa. It's fantastic. But what I wanted to say is, I think she's one of the kindest creators I've ever watched. Just a pleasure to watch her kind of do her intro and outro and, you know, the content in between. You know, sometimes you just need some stuff to let your mind get away from other stuff for a while. I kind of use it as that kind of filler material, just like, hey, I'm going to go take a trip with Nora Lee. Her name's Nora Lee. And, man, just get away, just like missionary bush pilot in Papua New Guinea, although he's leaving Papua New Guinea, so that kind of sucks. But I don't think he's going to be off of YouTube. But anyway, I just wanted to comment on how great her site is and her episodes are. She gets into some things, man, and she travels alone. It's crazy. It's really kind of crazy, but always entertaining, a good time, and yeah, so check her out if you dare go to YouTube. I do. I know what they're doing, and still need some decent entertainment. You know, it's kind of funny, like a lot of the Well, maybe I haven't explored this enough lately, and I probably should, but it doesn't seem like there's a lot of that kind of content on the alternate platforms, podcasting and streaming platforms. And I think more and more people are going to end up doing stuff like that on there. Like, I was thinking, one thing is kind of to get the political messages out there to kind of reveal the true fake news that's in the world. Sorry, I bumped my mic. A lot of people have gone to these alternative platforms, which I'm thankful for sure. But it seems like there is a lot of like informative shows like mine on BitChute and Rumble and Odyssey, I guess are the three main ones I'm thinking of. And not so much more kind of entertaining stuff. So I'm going to make some changes also. Well, there's a caveat here for sure. I ordered up a GoPro, and you guys all know I bought this dual sport motorcycle. I've done some upgrades to it. I changed the tires right away. I got that done day before yesterday or yesterday. And so I'd have more aggressive off-road tires. Well, my trip to work and back is pretty simple. 3 mile trip. Half of it's on gravel, half of it's on road. I'm going to just start like recording that and putting it up there because pretty much every trip to work and back, something happens. I see wildlife, I see something unusual, or it's just a peace, or sometimes it's just the sunrise, or coming home in the evening, the weather. Anyway, I'm hoping it'll be interesting, and I actually get the drone out, do some more drone footage. I think that'd be fun. And hopefully give other people a chance to, find something fun and relaxing to watch. To get away from all the stuff that's going on in the world. I mean, we are basically being like inundated, attacked from all sides by, the people who are running the world right now. And I wanted to start off the podcast by saying I'm still having a great time. I'm still having a great life. I'm gonna make the best of this life as long as I can. Do that with as little interference as possible from the government. That interference is getting pretty rough right now for everybody. And I know that, man. I see my coworkers also suffering, having a rough time. And they're doing pretty good. I mean, I think they're still enjoying life too, but it's a struggle. It's a struggle when gas goes up twice as much as it was, a year or so ago. A lot of people are barely making it paycheck to paycheck even a year ago, and now they're paying twice as much for gas. It's rough. I get that. I wanted to also talk about like the weather here in Oregon right now. It's kind of like we're in this perfect cycle of two or three sunny, clear sky, warm days, and then two or three rainy, wet, kind of cold, gray days. Now, a lot of people, like my daughter, for example, she absolutely is tired of the rain because she's a sunshine girl, man. She likes sunny, warm weather. So, you get a little tease of that, and then the rain comes back, and I think it kind of, I mean, she does have a great attitude about life in general. Honestly, she's one of the most amazing women that I know. And I didn't have a lot to do with that, honestly. Maybe I did a tiny bit, but anyway, the rain and stuff kind of makes people a little depressed or can get wearing on you. But like for me, I'm thinking this is like the perfect rotation of weather for food growing, for producing food. So you get a couple days to put some more seeds in the ground or to transfer some plants out of the greenhouse. and get them in the ground, and the you know, nature takes care of the watering, and nature takes care of the sunshine. And I can tell you already, I'm thinking, okay, but it's not always going to be like this right now. You know, I mean, maybe as with every summer, maybe we're going to have another brutal summer where there's 5 weeks of 90 degree plus weather and everything dries up and half the freaking state is on fire because we have lousy forest management in this state and in the country, if you want my opinion. But right now, things are good. But I'm always thinking, okay, it is good right now, but be prepared for when it's not. Yeah, and we do have a rainwater system. We collect rainwater. We actually gravity flow the garden when we have a giant tank that we collect the rainwater in, and then we, you know, let that water the garden. Although this year, I don't think that tank's big enough to do it by itself, but we'll see. We will see. Let's see, Itchy Boots. Oh, Memorial Day weekend, you know, I just want to say thanks to those who gave their lives when they thought they were doing the right thing. I myself was part of the uniformed services, you know, and at the time I did it, you know, I thought I was doing it for noble purposes. It actually did some good for me. It got me to where I am today, actually. I have a retirement from uniformed services, and I know a lot of people gave their lives thinking they were doing the right thing, and I just honor those people for doing what, you know, they thought was right at the time. Yeah, and it's a big weekend here. We always have a big barbecue. Oh, I got to tell you guys what we're thinking about doing. So I'm going to move into this kind of earlier than I was going to because it's a perfect time. So the company I work for, you guys know I've talked about, they were going to be, the company I work for got a grant so that they could entice people to work more time and to provide more care. And my office decided, we've decided as a group, we would like to do that. And so we applied for 16 days of work. And it would be on Saturdays, which that kind of sucks. But they're paying double time. So everybody's going to work. We actually didn't get 16 days. We actually got 8 days, which is kind of cool. Because that means every other weekend we're off. And every other weekend we work a Saturday. So, what was I going to say? Ah, God dang it. I hate when that happens. Rob didn't even do it to me that time. Hang on one sec. Let me get a drink too. Oh yeah. I'll get back to that in just a sec. Rob Works said, Oregon thinks they own the rain, and that's true. There's some cities in Oregon who actually try and charge you for collecting rainwater. Yeah, it's a crazy world we live in. Anyway, back to what I was going to say. So we're going to be working every other Saturday from June and July, which means my Saturday show is going to be like my Wednesday show. I'm going to get home from work and have to get right into it, which will be fine. I think I usually prepare pretty well throughout the week. But what I was saying about putting up other, you know, videos and stuff, I'm going to have to kind of figure out how to do that. Like the videos going to work and back on a motorcycle, that'll be cool. You know, I'll get some footage of whatever and throw that up once in a while and maybe fly the drone at lunch or I don't know what, but we'll have some content going. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing because I love to do it. Also, if you didn't see the pictures of Ruby, which I put up last week, she will be coming on June 12th. So we only have, you know, a couple weeks, 3 weeks, and she'll be, still get to come home, so that's kind of cool. And I started the gig in Salem with the kids who need root canals. That was kind of awesome. It went really well. I think I talked about that a little bit on Wednesday. Yeah, I did. But anyway, it's a busy time right now. I mean, it's really busy time. Like, the garden is going. We actually finished the greenhouse, the rebuild of the greenhouse. So now we have a solid greenhouse, not just a frame and acrylic, whatever you call it, the siding. I forget what they're called. But anyway, it's all done now. It's actually got solid walls. It's a fully constructed greenhouse. And Rochelle had start moving stuff back in there, plants back in there and stuff. But yeah, we have a ton of stuff going on. And then lost my train of thought. Oh, I will tell you, this is kind of along those lines, losing your train of thought. So I've kind of reverted back to my youth a little bit, kind of in my teens, early 20s, because this whole dual sport motorcycle thing, you know, that bike, it's pretty quick and it's pretty agile. And, you know, it's like I want to, go off road a little bit, but my body's telling me no, like you have to take it a little easier than you did when you were 20. That's for sure. You know, there's a price to pay whenever you're having too much fun, but it is fun and everything's going to be fine, but, got to get back on track here somewhere. Somehow having fun. I was having fun. I'm going to continue to have fun no matter what. I hope everybody else does too. And I hope we all kind of get through this. I don't have a lot of friends. It's kind of funny. I consider you guys who join me in the chat room, who listen to my show, my friends. I'm not really very social, which I know that sounds weird because I'm a dentist. And, you know, doing dentistry, you're kind of, you know, up close and personal with people. Like, you're 17 inches away from their face. You're working on them. You have to, you know, pretty intimate space there. I don't mean that in a weird way. It's just that's the way it is, you know. You have to actually put your fingers in somebody else's mouth to do whatever it is you're doing. So kind of when I'm done with my day, that's kind of it. I'm done with this is going to sound horrible. I'm done with people too. I like my little time, like right when I leave work and when I get home, just to have a little space where nobody is 17 inches away from my face and, you know, kind of chill out and hang here on the computer, get some notes, follow whatever stories are going on in the world. And, I look at mainstream media stories and ignore them because they're pretty much always wrong, or always there's something horribly wrong with the way they're telling the story. So, you know, you got to dig deeper and look in different places to find information. And I do that, and then I go do our stuff, you know, stuff that we do together as a family, or Rochelle and I do together. So let's see if I covered all the stuff I want to do, kind of homestead updates. Yeah, look at the mainstream media, then find out what they lied about. That is exactly true. Oh, yeah, I talked about the Salem thing. So the next 2 months is going to be crazy busy. So if I'm late doing a show, or if I post something, like I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to record some segments early so that when I go live, I can play some of the segments while I'm kind of getting my act together. But I don't know. You guys do it for entertainment purposes, I'm sure. So hopefully it'll be entertaining if nothing else. Oh, gosh. What else, man? This week, I kind of want to talk about this one patient. I am going to tell you about this one patient. This is the craziest thing. She's like a 1 in a million patient. I'll tell you 2 stories about the week. So this 1 in a million patient, She's roughly my age, and when she first came in, she was telling me about this cancer she had in her eye, and I was looking at her eye, and so you know how all of us have a pupil and it's black, you know, and then the colored part around your eye. Well, she actually had a cancer in the colored part of her eye, and they went, and because it was a bad cancer that couldn't stay there, where it would spread to her brain or whatever. Well, so they cut it out, which made her pupil look kind of like a keyhole. So you had the round part and then kind of a little triangle cut out of the colored part of her eye. Yeah, it was malignant. And that was 20 years ago they cut that out. And, of course, then what happens is, well, the part that they cut out, all the light goes in there, like your pupil, you know, constricts. If you're out in real bright sun, it constricts to limit the amount of light that comes in. Well, she had this giant hole that light would just go in. Well, this week she came in, and they had repaired it. And that's the craziest thing. You know, the technology we have now. So she went from having that hole for 20 years. They had her come in, they did a bunch of scans, and they took some photos, and they did color-corrected photos, special, you know, all kinds of special photography to get the color and pattern just right, and sent it off to Germany, and Germany did their part, and then they sent that to some other place, and they did their part, and they sent it back to the United States, and she was the seventh person, I guess in the United States, but maybe in the world because this cancer is so rare, that had this implant done that totally restored her eye to normal looking and function. So now she doesn't squint when, you know, she doesn't have to cover that eye when she goes outside. And crazy technology, man, and you know, and she was really proud of it, and I mean, it was cool to like look at her eye and see how different it looked. It didn't look horrible or anything before, but you could imagine, man, let's just say, what if you had a pupil, two pupils in one eye, and one didn't adjust to the light? That's what it would be like. So every single, like even white light coming off the computer would be like blinding because your pupils aren't constricting to control the amount of light that's coming in. So that was pretty cool. You know, it's like one of those things that, you know, like, okay, you know, it's really rare, so you're not going to run into a lot of people who have that anyway. And then the other thing is it's all repaired now with new technology, and I got to actually see the results of that. So I got to see the before and after, and that was awesome. Okay, now I'm going to tell you something. I've almost been practicing for 40 years, which is really kind of sad. It's not. It's awesome. But when I first became a dentist, you know, like this idea, this utopian idea I had was, I'll just do this for like 20 years and then I'll retire. Yeah, that didn't work out so well. And, you know, you guys who listen to me all the time know I've been talking about retirement since I started doing this show. And I'm about that age. But what am I doing? Instead of kind of moving down, I've added now Saturdays because I guess because there's a huge need and I feel some way like maybe I could help and not only help people with their dental problems, but also let my staff make more money, especially going into this time, I think is going to be hell. So I think, you know, maybe next year we'll cut back and maybe the end of this year. I don't know. We'll see. I know. God dang it. Workaholic. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's probably, you know, what are the 12 steps? What's one of the first steps? You have to admit that you have a problem. I'm not there yet. But that was funny. All right, we're done with the stuff. I'm going to tell, oh, no, I know the other dental story. This is the craziest thing. So like I said, I've been practicing almost 40 years. And I'll tell you why I keep doing it, honestly. Because it's so flipping easy. Like, being a good dentist is kind of like just solving. If you play video games where you have to solve a puzzle before you can move on, it's a lot like that. Like, how do you solve this person's problem? And having done it for 38 years or whatever, oh God, it has been 38 years, oh God. You've solved a lot of problems in 38 years, more than likely. And it makes it very easy to solve problems on a daily basis. So you don't see very many people that you're just looking at them and looking at their x-rays and thinking, yeah, I don't know what to do here. Mostly, you can figure it out, you know. So that's why I keep doing it. But anyway, so this woman came in. Actually, somebody, another doc referred her to me because they thought that her tooth was broken in half, halfway up the root, which is in bone. And it'd been bothering her for like 2 years. And so they were like, hey, send it to Doc Mike and, you know, he can take it out. So when I looked at the x-ray, I was like, yeah, I kind of agree. This tooth looks like it's fractured halfway up the root in bone. And obviously there's nothing you can do to fix that. You just have to take the tooth out. Like, we don't have a way to fix a fractured root. Like even if you have a vertical fracture in a root and you get a root canal, it's not going to fix it. It's the tooth's still broken. It doesn't heal. The two pieces are going to, you know, rub against each other and press on the bone and cause you constant pain. So the woman comes in and we, you know, discuss, you know, what we think is wrong. And I told her, I said, you know, I'm not 100% convinced your tooth is fractured, but, you know, it's been giving you trouble for 2 years and it's been giving you the kind of symptoms that indicate a fractured tooth. So yeah, let's just get it out of there and figure out where we go from here. So if the tooth was fractured halfway down the root, I already knew that the top part of the tooth would come out and I would have to go in and surgically remove the root tip. Well, I numbed her up, I removed the tooth, and it was in one piece. And I said, yeah. So I go, well, the tooth came out in one piece, but it was obviously fractured. So what had happened, this is a tiny bit technical. Your root surface on your tooth and your bone are both made out of calcium hydroxyapatite. So they're similar compounds, like bone and root surface and like root structure are similar compounds. Well, your body has these cells that repair bone, right? Well, they don't really know the difference. Quick, put it back. Yep, no. Those cells don't really, they can't tell the difference between root surface and bone. So if you have an osteoclast, which is a cell that eats bone, let's say dissolves bone, well, it can eat, you know, root surface as well as just regular bone. And if you have an osteoblast, which actually makes bone, it will make bone wherever bone needs to be made. Well, what happened in this case, obviously, the reason you could tell this tooth was fractured is because there was an angle between the top of the tooth and the lower root of the tooth that was unnatural. It's like when you break your leg. It's like an unnatural bend. It's not a smooth curve. It's literally an angle. But the angle had repaired itself. The tooth had repaired. It had fused completely around, and you could literally see a band, almost like a welded bead of bone or root surface. They're both calcium hydroxyapatite. Around the fracture line of that tooth. So it was obvious that the tooth fractured and it repaired itself. And probably, she probably would have responded well to a root canal. I really don't know. Like I said, in 38 years, I have never seen this before. Usually when a tooth fractures, people can't tolerate it enough to let it sit there for 2 years. So, and it takes a long time to repair, if it's going to repair. Like, I don't even know how common this is for this fracture to repair. I probably, if I would have been smart, I probably could have written the paper for a journal. I'm not that interested in it. Yeah, I don't know. It probably was some kind of a trauma, obviously, that fractured that tooth. But that's the craziest thing. And I even, my assistants, I was like, oh, you guys got to see this. It's crazy that, you know, this tooth literally fixed itself. Or the body fixed it. So that was kind of cool. 38 years, never seen something like that. And there it is. All right, I want to talk about some fun stuff. I mean, that was kind of fun, at least I thought so. These two things are coming from the Pacific Northwest. One is about frogs and one is about wolves. I've been talking a lot about wolves lately. I guess because the encounters between wolves and cattle are becoming more because, of course, there's more and more wolves. Every year there's more wolves and every year there's going to be more, you know, encounters between ranchers and wolves. And it's an issue in the north here. But I also wanted to talk about this saving the spotted frog. And, of course, it's at the cost of food production. This came out of a story in the Capital Press, which is kind of a local ag magazine. It's kind of local. It's for, like, five states in the northwest, Idaho, Oregon, Washington. I don't know what other states, but kind of up here in the northwest. Maybe Northern California. It says a grazing plan is under attack for allegedly failing to adequately examine climate change effects on Oregon spotted frogs in the Fremont-Wenema National Forest. In a lawsuit, environmental advocates claim that federal officials didn't sufficiently analyze how more frequent and severe droughts will aggravate impacts from grazing on the protected species. Oh, aggregate impacts from grazing on the protected species. You can't assume the same hydrologic conditions that occurred in the last 10 years will occur in the next 10 years. No? Really? Yeah, so you mean there's climate change? Of course, there always has been. An attorney representing the Concerned Friends of the Wenema and four other environmental nonprofits. The nonprofits have now asked a federal judge to declare the U.S. Forest Service's allotment management plan to be unlawful. They also want the judge to shut down grazing in two pastures, Chemult and North Sheep, that make up roughly half the allotment. So, you know, my thing about saving every single animal, you know, that's ever lived on the earth or that lives now on the earth. You know, when one starts getting in, you know, rough times, it's like, oh, we got to stop every possible thing to protect that one animal. It's like that lizard in California that they won't allow you to pick up the, I call it fire fuel on your property or in the woods. They don't want you disturbing all that dead stuff on the ground because of some stupid lizard. So instead, we burn literally hundreds, well, tens of thousands and sometimes hundreds of thousands of acres every year because you can't pick up that dead fuel on the floor of forests. You know, and it used to be Like, it used to be you could go collect firewood, which was wood that was on the ground. You recently, you know, knocked down trees from wind damage or storm damage or fire damage. But now, you know, the Forest Service won't let you go in there. And, I mean, I guess sometimes you can get a permit or something. But no, in California, they just let all that dead fuel pile up on the ground, and then they wonder how come when they get those Santa Ana winds and extreme heat and thunderstorms and fire takes off, why they can't understand why it's burning so hot and so fast and destroying so much property. It only makes sense. In my opinion, it only makes sense. It's like, oh, well, hell, yeah, let's just pour gasoline on the freaking ground and throw a match to it and then ask how come there's a huge fire. Like, there's a ton of fuel on the ground. Kind of same thing here in Oregon. I guess in Oregon you can pick up deadfall. But a lot of the property in Oregon, a lot of the harvested forests are private land, and they don't want you in there. They don't, you know, they won't, that's gated, so you can't go in and pick up all that stuff. So, of course, all that stuff ends up on the ground, and we have, a couple years ago, no, it was probably 10 years ago now, one of my buddies shot an elk. He's a bow hunter. He shot an elk, and he needed help getting it out, so a couple of us up here on the hill went with him to pack this elk out, quarter it, of course, and pack it out. And we had one horse, took the horse with us, and we were, we get to the point where the elk was just off the road, and the elk was only 100 yards off the road, but it was like all of us were lucky we didn't break a freaking leg. And the horse, we ended up having to leave the horse on the road because there were so many trees and limbs on the ground that you couldn't just like walk over to the elk. It was literally, and plus it was raining, so everything was kind of slippery. And it was treacherous. I mean, that last 100 yards, you know, that was the trial right there. If you survived that last 100 yards and then 100 yards coming back out with who knows how many pounds of meat on your back to get it to the horse so we could have the horse carry it out. But it was just brutal. But all of that is fuel, and it's dry. You know, it's like perfectly cured wood for a fire. And then when lightning strikes or man becomes careless and fire gets out of control, everybody just wonders, you know, how in the hell this fire could be burning so fast, you know, and then you blow on it a little bit with a east or west wind, and so east wind is worse because it's dry, dry wind out here on the west coast because it comes across the desert, and, you know, people just shake their heads like, oh, these fires are so hard to put out and it's so hard to contain them. Yeah, man, because we don't remove the fuel. If we were actually good stewards of the forest, we would literally take the fuel off of the forest floor. That wouldn't stop forest fires, but it would make them different. It would change the, you know, the structure of those fires so that maybe they would burn in the treetops up in the umbrellas, but not so much on the ground, which actually kills the trees by killing the trunks. Yeah, but, you know, we don't have, like, nothing the government does is common sense, which is really kind of sad when you think about it. It's like having an engineer design something for you. It's going to be the most complicated freaking solution. Oh, it's going to work. Like, you can almost be guaranteed that it's going to work, but it's going to be the most complex solution that you've ever come across, usually. That's just my experience with engineers. And even some of my engineer friends say, yeah, we kind of overdo it. So I don't know how much that is just my opinion and how much of it is real. And I've heard it from other people, too. But that doesn't make it real. It's probably on Google. Hey, while I'm talking about trees, Do any of you find it kind of ridiculous that the federal government is spending billions of dollars to make machines that will remove carbon from the air and compact it or change it into oxygen? Like, nobody in the federal government knows that that's what trees do? Like, hello, how about we just plant some freaking trees and let nature take care of it? No, this is kind of one of those things. Probably an engineer got his hands on this and decided, hey, what we really need, we need a machine that will take carbon out of the air and convert it to oxygen. So we got to figure out how to do that. They literally are going to do that. Like, I like to brag about Oregon a little bit because Oregon plants, I don't know, 2 to 4 trees for every tree that they harvest. It's kind of the rule here. And it's actually been in practice for decades. Like, I think when maybe 100 years ago, I bet it wasn't that long, but I don't think it was much. It was a long time ago that loggers decided, hey, you know, if we harvest all of these trees, there's not going to be any jobs left for us. So they started this, you know, reprod, they call it, reproduction, reprod, where once they clear cut a section, they go back in and plant trees. And I hear the arguments all the time, you know, the environmentalists will tell you, oh, but those trees are, you know, those trees are little tiny trees. Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are little tiny trees because we harvested the big ones. Yeah, we harvested some big, beautiful trophy trees in our past. You know, out here we have Douglas firs that are kind of protected now, the old growth timber. You don't get to harvest old growth timber so much, or I think you have to selectively harvest in old growth forests. But still, all the other forests that are harvested are like a crop. They're harvested and they're replanted. And guess what? They grow. It's not like you're planting a tree in an environment that it's not familiar with. You're planting the exact same kind of tree in the exact same environment that you just harvested trees from. So they like the soil. They're used to growing there. They grow. You come back in 50 years and you harvest it. You know, reproduction. I'm not even a logger. In fact, I guess I should be on the other side because I got my degree in biology from the University of Oregon. You know, I'm supposed to be a libtard, you know, who believes that you shouldn't harvest any trees. Well, I'm not. I believe that you need to, you know, you need to manage, you know, you need to manage resources. Like, you can't mine uranium and go back and plant uranium. I don't know if there's a limited amount of uranium on the earth. Well, no, that's a stupid question. Of course there's a limited amount. I don't know if uranium just like reproduces itself every so often. Or copper or silver or what was the thing that we were talking about recently used for automobiles? Lithium batteries. You know, fossil fuel, I believe, reproduces itself. I don't think it's ever going to stop producing. And I don't think we'll ever use all the fossil fuel that's in the world. I just don't believe it. You can't prove it to me. I don't think anybody can point to one single oil well that's ever been sucked dry and never produced another drop of oil. When they go back 10, 15 years later, it produces oil. It's like a, you know, constant supply of oil. But when you take away, you know, when you take that kind of information away from young people, if you only let young people believe that there's a limited supply of fossil fuels in the world, and they don't ever get to hear anything else, which they don't. The kids these days don't. they really believe, you know, I think I was saying in that show, I talked about the school shooting that, you know, our kids have so little to look forward to because we brainwashed them into thinking that there's not going to be anything left for them. And the funny thing is, back in 70, I think, it had to have been in 70, 71, because that's when our family moved from California to Oregon. I was born in Oregon, of course. That's a long story. But anyway, I just remember leaving that school system in California. Because, and I was talking to my mom on the way home one day, and I said, well, what are we going to do? Because, you know, this ice age is going to freeze the entire northern hemisphere. And, you know, how are we going to live with that? And I just remember feeling like so hopeless that the coming ice age was going to destroy everything and there was no way we were going to live. And instead, we get this, you know, climate change because the earth is warming so fast. And I'm thinking, thank God, man, we're going to be able to grow vegetables all the way up to the Arctic Circle and feed the world. But no, that's not how we look at it. It's a disaster, don't you know? Oh my God, how'd I get off on that for this poor little frog? Doesn't matter. Okay, the wolf thing. Let's get on to the wolf thing. Only because I think these kind of things are interesting. So this is the problem, of course. You know, wolves and cattlemen don't like each other. Well, that's not true. Wolves love cattlemen. Well, at least their cattle. And especially those tasty little morsels. Because they attack those calves and they eat a calf. You know, the thing is with wolves, it's like a feeding frenzy, man. They'll go in and kill like 10, 11, well, okay, 5 to 11. I've seen the remains where they had like 11 dead calves and one of them was eaten. But the 11 of them were dead. And I mean in one night. I don't know, wolves must just love killing calves or something. But yeah, so it says Northeast Washington wolf pack's renewed attacks on calves won't be met with lethal response, the Department of Fish and Wildlife said Thursday. The department's director, Kelly Suswind, opted against authorizing the removal of one or two wolves in the Togo pack. Wolves attacked two calves last week, injuring one and killing the other in a private pasture. The predations were the fourth and fifth in the past 10 months in the pack's history. Now see, honestly, that doesn't sound too bad to me. But I'm not a cattleman. Like, I don't know how many head of cattle this guy has. And, you know, like, if, I mean, those calves represent a lot of money. I just bought we just ordered up another half of beef. It was slaughtered the day before yesterday. It's going to hang for 30 days because that's the way we like it. Hang for 30 days, and then cut and wrap. So that half of beef, cut and wrapped, is going to cost $2,700. So just imagine that cattleman's getting a cut, the butcher's getting a cut, you know, so there's some division there. I can't remember. It's not that much cut. It's like 50 cents a pound, cut and wrap. So the big expense is buying the half of beef. The lesser expense is having it cut and wrapped. My point is, that one calf represents a lot of money to somebody. I mean, somebody's getting $2,700 for half a beef, so about $5,000 for a whole beef. And yeah, it's Angus, it's delicious, it's pasture, it's really, he's right down the road. I can go there anytime. I know, I've been there, talked to him, love the guy, he's fantastic. He would not do crappy stuff with his meat because he depends on us to come back to get beef the next year. He wants his customers to continue to come back, which is why I buy beef the way I buy it. I'm fortunate that I can do that. But, yeah, so the cattleman's got it. I mean, what they say, attacking two calves last week, injuring one and killing the other. So, I don't know if the injured one you know, had to be put down or harvested or if it's fine, I don't know. But the bottom line is that one calf could represent $5,000. A certain percent of that is the cattleman's, a certain percent of that is the butcher's, right? So that's kind of a lot of money. Like, I wouldn't want to be dropping $5,000 out of my, you know, out of my money. Oh, maybe I'm cutting out. No, I'm stopping. I'm pausing, Rob Works. Sorry about that. But I wouldn't want to be dropping $5,000 of my money, just like, you know, just drop it out of the budget. And that's basically what this cattleman is doing. No, I see. I don't know. Maybe I am cutting out, but I'm watching the meters. It looks like everything's fine. But I don't know. I'm going to keep going. We're almost done. So that's good. I don't see anything overdriving either. Both meters are kind of in the green, maybe a little yellow once in a while. Oh, stream went dead. Well, that's awesome. Let's see. Did it reconnect? Oh. Okay. All right. Well, the recording is going to be fine because it doesn't cut out. God, I love this Linux system, man. Perfect operating system for everything. Love it. Anyway, so they're not going to go kill these two wolves, and I can kind of see that. I mean, yeah, it sucks that you lost a calf, but come on, it was, you know, and what they say, 10, let's see, the department's protocols for considering lethal control after 4 attacks in 10 months or 3 in 30 days. Wow, that's kind of a lot, 3 in 30 days. That's a lot to lose in a month. But I can get... You know, there's a balance here, and I think that's what we missed out on when the United States was being settled, let's say, when it was being civilized. I think that's where we really didn't do a good job at all. You know, the Native Americans lived in harmony with the land for the most part, and you know, they didn't kill everything in sight. They killed what they needed to kill. Well, hell, we came in and just freaking, you know, eliminated the buffalo and eliminated wolves. We destroyed, you know, grizzly bears like crazy. You know, for stupid reasons, I think some of those things, I mean, buffalo hides were fantastic hides, but Jesus, you know, we kind of missed the boat there on whether or not we wanted to keep a crop for harvesting, if you know what I mean. Like, you should have thought way back then, yeah, there's not an endless supply of freaking buffalo. I don't know why. Well, we killed wolves because they interfered with people. And, you know, they, yeah. I mean, just imagine back then, you're coming across the country and you brought a couple goats and maybe a cow or two and who knows what are the sheep or whatever. And, you have months of travel to go and you wake up one morning, your damn meat is gone because wolves took it. Yeah, that'd probably piss you off pretty good because your life kind of depends on it. No, I don't know. I know there was a bounty on wolves for a while and, you know, we went crazy and over-harvested them. And that's not the way that you manage the environment and manage wildlife. It's not a good practice to destroy every single living one of whatever, if they have something worth harvesting, you want to keep that population healthy, no matter what it is. So you can't destroy every last one and then just move on to the next species, you know, except for nutria. Nutria, I think we should eliminate from the face of Earth. Well, I'm kidding. Just in the United States. You know, they're native to somewhere. They don't need to be here. Another invasive species. Another brilliant thing that we've done. God dang it. Somewhere in this whole line, the last 55 minutes, I was going to tell you guys something that I have totally forgot what it was. But anyway, let's kind of finish up on the story. The last attack was confirmed May 18th. So that was what, 10 days ago? The pasture was patrolled by one range rider. I think those are government people, but I could be wrong. The second range rider was added the next day. Yeah, Fish and Wildlife spokesman, blah, 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 said. The rancher had been checking on the cattle regularly, too, and flashing lights were in one pasture before the predation. Now, let me tell you what these flashing lights are. They're basically kind of a supposedly a deterrent. I might have told you guys about this. We have one on our chicken coop. This is the craziest thing. And I actually had game camera footage that you could see this actually worked. I forget what this dang light is called, but it's to deter predators. And the theory behind it is that it's a little tiny red LED that blinks. Now, I don't know if this is what they were using in this pasture, flashing lights. Who knows? They probably had something else. But I'm telling you what I have on my chicken coop, because the damn coons, before we totally enclosed it with hard wire, I forget what you call it, not chicken wire, the other hardware cloth. Before we totally enclosed it in hardware cloth, the coons would come and just climb the fence and go in and enter the coop and grab a chicken and kill it. So before we enclosed it completely with hardware cloth, that means the top also, we put this predator eye on there. I think that was called predator eye. And it's a little tiny red flashing LED. And when predators think that something's watching them, they're not so willing to, like, go ahead with their plan. So this little tiny red light is above the, I don't know, 1 foot square door that the chickens use to actually enter the roost for the night. And before we put that hardware cloth over it, I just had that light above there, and we had a coon problem for a while. So I had a game camera up, and sure enough, you see this coon come right next to the game camera, and you could kind of tell he was like, oh, shoot, man, there's a eyeball on me. And he wouldn't go in that coop as long as that light was just flashing there. And it worked. It deterred predators. Like, so we didn't lose any more chickens, and now they're all secured safely, especially now since we're going to be raising our own meat birds too. It's pretty important. And so I don't know what they were using, but anyway, they actually had, it actually worked, and I don't know what they were using in that field, but let's see how big this pack is. The pack had grown to 7 members by the end of 2021. So the wolf pack has 7 members, and they're obviously doing well. They don't have to work real hard for beef. But it becomes an issue, and it does for both the wolf and the cattleman. It's going to be an issue. Man, I have a lot of more stuff, which is cool. That means my take fives, I already have information written for. And Wednesday night, I have Wednesdays off, which is a good thing, so I'll be doing Wednesday show. Yeah, Predator Eye. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And they're awesome, by the way. They worked really well. So if you have an open coop, or, if your coop isn't secured, that's a good way to do it. All right, you guys. A couple things I'm going to talk about this week is I want to talk about this whole Hillary Clinton thing. It is just getting so crazy. The truths that are coming out now, years later, it's just so crazy that we're actually getting to the truth. But only people who, the truth isn't being banned from. I also have 2 stories on how many armed citizens actually stopped active shooters, because the FBI compiles that information. Yeah, and you can go see it for yourself, but of course nobody's going to talk about that. And I have some other gun lies I want to cover. And then I'm also going to talk this week about how poorly our public school systems are doing at educating our kids. And then I have a story on how heart inflammation is increasing drastically after COVID vaccinations, and it's far more common than blood clotting issues, and actual cardiac surgeons are actually worried about that. Oh, Hillary Clinton, I hope. Yeah, I was talking about Hillary Clinton, not anybody else.
Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dennis podcast. please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.